All righty, good evening, everyone. It is 5:03, so we're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Seth Bro. I'm one of the program coordinators here at SUNY Coble Skills Institute for Rural Vitality, and I'd like to welcome you to tonight's Access to Capital event. Upon entry, you've all been muted. Should you have any questions, please feel free to use the chat box or Q&A. Throughout the webinar, I will drop links in the chat box to support some of our speakers, so keep your eye there. And all information discussed will be posted at www.cobleskill.edu/institute on our post events page. The Institute for Rural Vitality is pleased to be hosting this event. As a pillar of the rural community, the Institute for Rural Vitality performs work and delivers on initiatives that are outside of the state's academic funding in the areas of economic and cultural development, by providing linkages between the rural community and the academic resources of the college. Our mission is to engage the substantial resources of SUNY Cobleskill in collaboration with our regional partners to enhance community and economic vitality. We hold a number of grants and a multi-million dollar grant portfolio, which funds some programs that some of you are likely familiar with, the Farm and Food Business Incubator and Accelerator. Along with our partners at CADE, the Incubator and Accelerator delivers business development and technical services to participants looking to start, expand, and sustain enterprises in the farm and food sector. For more information about our programs, please visit www.cobleskill.edu/institute. Tonight, we are joined by our friends at USDA Rural Development, Farm Credit East, and New York State Empire State Development. Each will be discussing programs that are available to the industry. Please feel free to use the chat to interact with the presenters when appropriate. There will be a chance for Q&A following each speaker, and we'll loop back at the end for any questions we may have missed. Tonight, we'll start with Stephen from Farm Credit East, followed by Gio and his team at ESD, and wrap up with Bob from USDA Rural Development. With that, I'm going to stop sharing my screen and give the floor over to Stephen.
Hey everyone, my name is Steve Clark from Farm Credit in Cooperstown. Let me just give me a moment here and I'll get this shared. Okay, can everyone see that all right?
We sure can.
Okay, great. So we are in Farm Credit East in Cooperstown. I've been there for almost 2 years now, and I service the Otsego County, Herkimer, and Montgomery County areas. And I just threw something together and then built this presentation to kind of talk about the different programs, lending programs that Farm Credit East offers. Our specialty is obviously in agriculture. So what are the different programs depending on what it is that you need to borrow money for, and how can we make that work? So our three main products are as follows here. Lines of credit, revolving lines of credit, standard term loans, and then long-term mortgages for real estate purchases. So starting with lines of credit, one way to somewhat think about it, even though there are differences, is like a credit card. You get approved for a certain limit. You can borrow off said line and then pay that line, you know, as you pay that balance off, it becomes available to you again. We have two primary methods of those lines of credit, one being an operating line of credit. Those are typically used for short-term operating expenses. If you need to buy in your inventory, if you're running a greenhouse, you have to buy in all your inputs, you borrow your money in May, you spend it all on your inventory, you have your season through the summer. Once you guys close, you take the money you have, you put it back to us on the operating plus interest, and the rest is yours for your profit. You know, so typically we say a 1 year payback on that. It's really whatever the operating cycle is of your loan or when you see the money return to you from your investment. Sometimes it's a little bit longer term than 1 year, could be 2 years. If it's, you know, stuff to do with land, buying and selling. Others, it could be 6 months if your season is short enough. Secondly, there are capital lines. So that would be revolving credit available for machinery equipment, livestock, if you can cash flow it, land, and other building improvements. Typically go 5 years max payback on that, depending on the condition of the equipment. It can all vary about how much down we require and what the typical payback on those things are. These interest rates will always be variable on a line of credit, which means they change as the market changes. And that's kind of just has to keep that way because funds are always available. You're not locking in any amount of funds at any time. For collateral, it can be secured by what you're buying. Typically, even with operating lines, we do look in the agricultural world, machinery equipment, any livestock you have or real estate already owned would provide as collateral, being our recourse if to back the loan. Moving on from that, term loans, pretty generic thing of it, kind of as a car loan, if you're paying on those now. It's similar to capital line of credit, typically used for capital needs. They're non-revolving funds. I just need $20,000 to do X, and I'll pay it back to you in 5 years, 60 months. You know, if you don't see yourself having a lot of future lending needs, that's probably a good option. You can fix your rate on those, but you could also have them variable if you prefer that way. And again, if you have either machinery equipment, livestock owned free and clear, that can back it. Whatever you're purchasing can back it, or existing real estate can back those. And again, capital needs, one-time purchases of a tractor, skid steer, herd of some sort. And those typically same week would go up to 5 years on those. Lastly, mortgage, purchasing real estate, obviously in agriculture, real estate is kind of the backbone of a lot of the industry. We can lend up to an absolute maximum of 85% on any real estate purchase if it's going on the long term. So that 15% down payment to be expected to have on anything, you know, if it's a $100,000 purchase, we would require about $15,000 down, $200,000, $30,000 down. So we'll just be anticipate having to come up with that for any sort of real estate purchase. We go, you know, 15 to 25 years, we typically deem an appropriate commercial term for most real estate purchases. We can go 30 years. That's typically the maximum that Farm Credit East will go as a 30-year mortgage. Again, can also be fixed or variable interest rates. And there's some time that goes into these if you are looking to purchase. I mean, it requires the real estate has to be appraised. Legal work has to be done to look at title. You can be about 60 to 90 days to close from the receipt of application. So of these, you know, three options, it really covers anything a farmer or any farm operation might need as far as operating expenses, capital expansion, and real estate. And a lot of those things that we can lend really depend on, you know, credit, you know, the credit that is presented. And I'm sure you guys all get quite taking credit classes and understand a lot of it. But just to dive more specifically in what a bank like Farm Credit would look for, I'm just kind of going to go into the different credit things that we look at to determine if you qualify and what kind of term and interest rate would work that we could do. So first and foremost, if you're going to go to a lender, understand exactly what you're asking for. It cuts down on time and makes things easier on everybody if you know exactly what you need the money for and how much that you need. Any lender is going to want to know the following. They're going to want to know your background, how you got to where you were, why you're in business, you know, what kind of drives you as far as wanting to do what you do. Going back to that first question, what do you need? And as well as your current financial position, how has your business performed? Are you starting up? Where are you as far as assets owned, what you owed? Again, I'm sure you've gone over it before, but the five C's of credit is something that's real that all banks, you know, use to evaluate what they can do for you from a lending perspective. So to start, probably the most important, depends who you ask, would be character. You know, that's where we as a lender are evaluating your honesty and your responsibility. We look at that because any long-term success, regardless of where you are financially in the moment, depends on good and honest management. Are you someone that other businesses are you get to deal with. Part of that is your reputation, which can be gathered by listening. If typically a loan officer, banks, they're out dealing with a lot of businesses in the area. And you hear things, you talk to a lot of people, you really get a feel for what's around, and your reputation could bleed into that. Credit score, look for 700 or better. Now, oftentimes, if you're looking to start up a business, if you don't have a long credit history and it's under 700, that's not a deal breaker. I mean, especially if it's due to lack of history, I'd say that no credit score is better than a very adverse credit score, due to delinquencies and other, balances that are already too high for what they've been approved for. So if we see a pretty clean report without any real issues against it, if the financial stuff is good, we can work with it. The lender needs to know who they're working with as much as they need to know the financial position. There's a reason why we like to call, we like to come out right on farm to see your operation, to understand what it is that Farm Credit would be getting into in a case like that. Okay, next, this would be 1B for probably the most important C of credit is capacity. And this, the onus should kind of be on you to think about this too before you come to apply. Can you afford a loan? You'll be asked to share your last 3 years of income and expense information typically. Does the business historically show capacity to afford new debt payments? So if we talk about a purchase and we calculate it out and it's $500 a month, that's $6,000 a year extra. Has your business shown profitable that it could afford to make those debt payments while meeting all of your other operating expenses, as well as covering your own family living, food needs, things like that. Yet you have to pay yourself something to live. So does it show that? If you're a growing business, startup business, typically there could be a lack of earnings history, and we see it often. In that case, that's not a no. A thoughtful and detailed budget will have to be provided of how this purchase will either generate the income to pay for itself, or what other management or operation changes are going to be required in the year ahead that are going to show that this can be paid for. The best source of earnings are tax returns. If you file tax returns, again, depending on your work history. But tax returns, we typically look to review those, personal. When we look at the whole picture too, if you have off-farm wage income, we consider that. We also consider your business income as being able to cover everything. Detailed, neat profit and losses are also acceptable as long as if we see good record keeping, we have confidence in the accuracy of it. That can be used as well. Moving on, the next C being capital. Where is the business today? So this is an overview of assets owned and debts owed. We'll collect the balance sheet, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. But we look at current assets and your liabilities to get a feel for what do you have, what are you operating with from a cash, equipment, capital assets, land, and what of that are you borrowing against already? What we're looking for there is general solvency. Do you have the room that if you were to suffer some earnings hardship, are you still left with something, left for ways to weather the impact? Because if you're highly leveraged, if you're not getting money in the door, that's going to affect the claim to all those assets that you're using to run your business. Debt payments have to be made. So net worth, typically assets minus your liabilities, net worth percentage, that number, assets minus liabilities, as a percentage of your total assets. We'll see on the next slide, but we typically look for about 40%. Understand with a startup, it's typically less than that, and there's things we can do to work with that I will address towards the end. The other thing we look for with the balance sheet is your liquidity. So current assets, so it's the current liabilities. Again, how much liquid assets do you have that if you lost income for a year, could you continue to service payments? Yeah, you won't have operating expenses, but if the debt is already out there and you're not selling the assets, those payments still have to be made. So 2-to-1 current to assets, current liabilities, generally very healthy. 1-to-1 is about where it at least should be. It's just a sample balance sheet here, kind of how we look at that. So 278,000 assets on the left-hand side with 159,200 on the right gives us net worth percentage of 118,800 to 43%. So it's just above the minimum. If other earnings credit factors are strong, it's, you know, something to worth looking at, you know, I think to pursue that would keep you in a healthy financial position. Looking then down to current ratio, this particular balance sheet, you know, 0.61 with a lot of that coming though from current portion of debt, which typically thought to be serviced by earnings, but at the same time, go back to the question for your own financial health. If you didn't have that income, how long could you, you know, keep going before you really started facing some hardship? Next would be collateral. So this is, again, for a lot of startup operations, if they're buying their first bit of equipment, that down payment is a little bit more important. You know, if something is $20,000 and we're requiring 20% down, that's $4,000 down. We could lend $16,000. If you have a pre-existing line of equipment that you own free and clear or real estate, we could also borrow, or, you know, we could use it to secure secure the loan. And then we could kind of lend based off of that. You know, collateral is used as security to the lender in the event of default. You know, we could seek recourse by taking claim and then selling those assets. It's the last thing any bank wants to do is do that. We typically look for ways out of it, but before then, you know, to work something out with you to make it affordable. I would say also about collateral, the more niche the collateral, the greater the down payment. So if you're entering a business that is really unique with unique equipment and assets, there's a less saleable market for it from the lender's perspective. They're going to require more of a down payment on things like that. And lastly, conditions. So that means we're good with the other four C's. And just here's a couple other things that we're going to want to add on to it. So depending on the position of the business, limits on capital spending. If we think that you spending X amount would jeopardize your ability to repay the loan, we can place a covenant on there. Financial reporting, letting us know quarterly, biannually, annually, monthly, where your business sits as far as some of those balance sheet and earnings ratios go. Insurance on the collateral, so just general insurance on buildings, equipment, and livestock, or possibly an FSA guarantee, which is common too for younger borrowers who don't have the equity built up yet. And I'll get into that here shortly. So what is typically available to startup operations? You know, capital is often the weakest position we see from, you know, serious inquiries. People who have good business plans, good business models, typically don't have the equity in to grow at the pace that, you know, a bank might like to see. So, you know, if you're buying a first-time farm, there's a couple ways that we could look to mitigate the risk from the lender's perspective. One would be an FSA guarantee. So Farm Service Agency, USDA, familiar with them. We would apply to have the loan guaranteed in the event of default. It acts really to the bank as an insurance policy. There's a fee for it, but it allows us to complete the loan. Or a cosigner, you know, FSA can, they do a lot of environmental due diligence. It can add time onto your application that if you, you know, frankly, sometimes the time's not there if you need to get something done at that time. So cosigner, if you have a family member, aunt, uncle, parent, business partner, however, who has a strong, typically equity position or good off-farm earnings, things like that, to come in and also guarantee the loan for farm credit. For startup operations, we have a farm start program. So what that is, that provides working capital is the idea for startup operations. Typically requires strong credit scores, not a poor credit history, really. You know, kind of going back to, it can be under 700 due to lack of history, but if it's only under 700, again, due to that lack of history, we can work with it. We would need a very detailed business plan. We seek credit references. You know, we have to know that you're really in on making this work, and we can kind of pledge it. Those farm start loans are typically not as hard on collateral as our other term loans or lines of credit. They are seen more of as an investment into a startup farm. And lastly, the FSA down payment program. FSA and a lender, not just Farm Credit, NBT will do this as well, will split the loan on 90 to 95% of the purchase price, while the borrower will only need 5 to 10% down payment. So if there's a solid business plan, if there's a history of earnings, let's say on a rented facility, and you're showing that you can make it work, but you haven't been able to save up maybe, you know, the $50,000 to $100,000 that might be needed for a down payment. But if everyone kind of believes in what you're doing, FSA and Farm Credit, you know, we'll split half of the loan halfway. You only have to put 5 to 10% down versus the typical 20-25, and we can go ahead with it. And so those are really some of the options that kind of help mitigate some of the credit weaknesses that just often come, that just naturally come with being a startup or a young farmer in the industry. So those are kind of the things I wanted to touch on that kind of gives the overview of what we offer, what we look for, to how to gain access to what we offer, and ways to mitigate it while you're doing your due diligence on what you think you need to apply for a loan, the things to keep in mind of how to get around some of those. So if you have questions, please feel free to reach out at any time, the specific situational questions. If I did this, then what could you do? My email is here. Please, if you want to take a second to write it down, and I'll get back to you with the best answer that I can. And here are some of the links to the things I mentioned: Farm Credit East's general website to explore everything we have to offer. Farm Start gives a good overview of, again, what we're looking there. And then the general FSA down payment program, FSA loan programs, as well. If you can't get traditional credit from a Farm Credit or NBT or however, FSA can still, if you have a good plan there, can still step in to help you out directly. So I believe now we're opening it up to some questions now, but then also questions later. So, but that concludes the slideshow.
Excellent. Thank you, Steve. Yes, if anybody has any questions, feel free to put that in the chat. Or if you'd like to raise your hand, I can unmute you to ask your question. Okay, no takers right now, but we will loop back a little later on. So with that, I will turn it over to Gio from Empire State Development.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Just getting this up right now. Right. So I'm Gio Holmquist with Empire State Development, and today I'm going to be discussing our incentive programs at ESD. So just a quick overview of what we'll be discussing, you know, what is Empire State Development? How do we assist businesses? And then what are some of our relative incentive programs? I'm very happy to be joined by Brian Bauer with Grow New York. And at the end of my presentation, we're going to go straight into Brian. He's going to discuss the exciting Grow New York program. So what is ESD? I work as an industry director covering agribusiness statewide for a strategic business team. Essentially, we look to help businesses grow and locate to New York State. We typically work more with the value-added processors than the farmers, which are supported by ag and markets. So for businesses doing value-added products, we're here to help. We could not do this without our partners across the state. We, besides our strategic business team, which is statewide, we have 10 regional offices throughout the state. We work closely with our state agency partners, such as Department of Environmental Conservation, Agriculture and Markets, New York Power Authority, just to name a few. We also work with economic development organizations across the state, from regional organizations to county organizations, to some are on the town level. We've really look to take a comprehensive view of a project to work with all relevant stakeholders. And then, of course, we cannot do economic development without academic institutions, including SUNY Cobleskill and Cornell, to name two of the prominent ones who work within agribusiness. So just wanted to share a quick map of our 10 economic development regions. Schoharie County is in the Mohawk Valley, which has the regional office in Utica. I actually work out of our main office in Albany, not located on the map, but get to travel statewide, which is a great perk of my position. So how is ESD suited to assist businesses? We're here to help gather information. We do this primarily by performing site searches. So taking a look at criteria from a business, whether it's for an existing building or a greenfield site, to help find places for relocation or expansion. We also have an in-house research team, which helps provide industry information. So taking a look at labor statistics, labor force, as well as we can perform NAICS code searches, see what types of businesses are in an area, or more importantly, where are potential suppliers or competitors. We can help by making connections. Like I mentioned, economic development is a team sport. We rely on many different partners. So reaching out to communities, to academic institutions, to other EDOs to help assist on a project, to bring a whole project team to help out, rather than having you as a business owner reach out to 10, 12 different people, try and get things done. And most importantly, why I'm here today is to discuss navigating potential incentives. New York State has several as-of-right incentives for businesses, including a 0% corporate income tax rate for manufacturers that there's no need to apply for, you get just for being located here. We have discretionary incentives, which I'll be focusing on this evening. And then there's other incentives from our other agency partners, including low-cost power through Recharge New York, property tax abatements through pilots with local EDOs, and many others can explore during an economic development project. Our main incentive program is the Excelsior Jobs Program. This provides completely refundable tax credits over a 10-year period as businesses meet and maintain job creation goals, as well as investment goals. For agribusiness companies to be eligible for the program, at least 5 net new jobs must be created. And this is a discretionary program, so there must meet what we call our but-for clause, meaning but for the incentive, the project would not move forward. So it's not necessarily rewarding for creating jobs, but really to help fill a gap either in a project budget or if there's a threat of the company leaving the state. So creating compelling need for the incentive. Some interesting things about the Excelsior program: green projects may be eligible for enhanced investment tax credits. It's a pretty loose what green means. So it's just kind of fulfilling the state's green mission. There's been a focus on childcare from this administration, and projects that provide childcare services may be eligible for enhanced tax credits. This is one of our main programs. It's fairly flexible, low job creation requirement, and there's no clawback provisions. So many companies enjoy it just because the paperwork isn't too onerous and it's pay for performance. So we don't look to recoup anything if job creation dips down in any given year. We do also have grants available through our Economic Development Fund, which provides grants on a reimbursement basis for economic development projects. Similar to Excelsior, it's based on that job creation investment. So as goals are met, funds are dispersed. Really important to stress that this is reimbursement, so there is no cash up front. A company must have either equity or a loan from our partners, like at Farm Credit East, to pay for the project, and then we'd look to reimburse as those goals are met. There's no minimum job requirement for this, but usually we do look for job creation to be a pretty large component, and funds can be used on construction, renovation, acquiring machinery and equipment, or training full-time employees. With grant funds, there is a look-back period. Typically, it's 3 years from the date of the disbursement. So if the goal was to create 5 net new jobs, you receive that money and then have to let 2 employees go, ESD does reserve the right to look back to recapture a portion of those funds. And grants generally do have other requirements with them, such as meeting minority and women business enterprise goals or service-disabled veteran goals. So those goals must be met, in order to receive the grant funds. We also do have a loan program, the JDA Direct Loan Program, and this provides loans for businesses such as manufacturers or agribusiness for rehabilitation of buildings, constructing new buildings, or purchasing machinery and equipment. Typically, the loan is structured 50% bank loan, 40% JDA, with 10% company equity. ESD takes a second position on the mortgage, which generally makes it appeal to bank loans since there's less risk for them involved. One really cool thing about this program is that $10 million has specifically been set aside to help small agribusiness companies create jobs across the state. So with that part of the program, it's really focused on helping the people on the Zoom today, small businesses focused on agribusiness. So really exciting opportunity there. In summary, we're here to help. We can help provide information for finding the right location, making connections to help build that right team to support your potential project, and navigating the many different incentives, not just the three mentioned briefly this evening. We do have tax credits, grants, and loans available to help. With anything you need, feel free to reach out to myself. Again, Gio Holmquist, work in our Albany office, or any of our regional offices that maybe you may locate in. We're always happy to help and work as a great team. So speaking of partners, Grow New York has been doing great things over the past 3 years. And I know with this latest budget, there's going to be some more great news there. So Brian, love to turn over to you to hear the latest on the program there.
Thanks so much, Gio. Let me, like you guys, let me see if I can get my deck up here. So everybody see that? You see that, Gio? Thumbs up. Great. So I'm Brian Bauer. I work for Cornell University, and I'm part of the team that brings Grow New York to the state. Grow New York is a food and agriculture innovation startup competition focused on helping build the food and ag innovation and ecosystem in New York State, and specifically in the Grow New York region. So I'd like to not take a moment to thank our funders. Thank you, ESD, very much for the funding for this program. ESD funds phenomenal programs for innovation. Grow New York is one. Please do look into them. There's several great competitions that ESD funds that really are focused on building startups, small companies that have innovations that can really scale and grow and have an impact on the economy of New York State. Particularly three regions, so Central New York, Finger Lakes, and Southern Tier, together took some of their funding and pooled it. And Gio did a good job of describing the different regions in the state. Cornell University is the other partner. I work for Cornell, and we run the program. So just again, to bring up the map, Grow New York is focused on these three regions. It's where the funding comes from, but it is about building the ecosystem in New York State. So if you are not located in these regions, the competition is still for you. In fact, we attract startups from all over. The goal of the competition is to build startups that have technologies and business models that can really impact the whole ecosystem. And so if you're from outside of the region, there's lots of ways to participate in terms of customers, in terms of production, in terms of other forms of developing your business. You don't have to move to the region if you happen to be, say, in Cobble Skill, which I think is just outside of this region. You don't have to move to participate. So I just wanted to say that right up front. You can learn more about exactly how that works on the website, which we're going to talk about at the end, grownewyork.com. So this region, just to boast a little bit about it, it's a big part of the farmland for New York State, and it employs about a third of the people working in food and ag, and that sector has been growing. So importantly, it's a growth industry for the region and for the state. What we've done as part of Grow New York is bring together the partner group that helps make this a success. And on this, it's a real eye chart. Apologies, especially if you're looking on a small screen, you might not be able to see it. But there's a lot of great names here, including phenomenal universities as well as industry and financial players. So we've got notables like Wegmans here and Chobani and universities like University of Binghamton and SUNYville. So there's a lot of great players, more than 50. This slide, I think, probably has about 50 on it, but that partner group has grown since we put this slide together. A little bit of background. We've run the competition for 3 years. And so far we've awarded money to startups that have raised over $35 million of follow-on funding. That means we've awarded funding to them. And since it's been 3 years, that would be just around $10 million in prize money that we've granted. There's $35 million that they've raised on their own. So building the ecosystem, spending that money, and using that money in the ecosystem. Plus they've hired people. So we've had some very notable successes with some of our early awardees, including RealEats, which is in Geneva, New York, which has hired a lot of people as their business boomed during COVID. Grow New York so far has had over 330 startups apply. So let me talk about what is a startup. A startup is a newly founded company, founded normally within the last 5 to 7 years, that is building a new business model with a technology or business model that can really scale. I often get the question, well, what about specific funding for a farm? Well, this is a competition for businesses that might have technology that could help a farm, that's for sure, but it's not typically for a more standard farm. It would be for businesses that are perhaps innovating and serving this farm. So I think it is having an indirect effect on the economy. But I just need to say that right up front because I get that question a lot. We've had over 330 startups apply from all across the region, across the state, across the world, actually. Well, 23 states, 32 countries have applied. So the other thing that competition brings, in addition to straight up competition to win some prize money, we match winners with a mentor. So the mentors are a big part of the ecosystem. They help that startup business to meet people in the region and to decide what they're going to pitch in the pitch competition to help build their business in the Grow New York region. And those mentors are some phenomenal people who have food and ag experience with startups and small companies, and really know the players in the region. These mentors will spend 1,000+ hours working with finalists, and the finalists, there are 20 finalists each year, so it's a lot of activity over a couple month period, typically in the early fall, helping people build their business. We have a whole judging process. So we have a group of 30 judges that we've pulled together with real expertise, read applications. Typically the application period will open in May, and I'll have a timeline here in a few minutes, but the applications will open in May and be open for a couple of months. Judges spend another couple of months reading applications and evaluating them and determining who the top 20 are. Those top 20 get announced in September, assign those mentors, and then they competition itself is typically in November. So what does that competition look like? Well, we bring three things together as part of the ecosystem. This photo here, this took place in Syracuse this past fall, this time around. So the first year, 3 years ago, was prior to COVID, and it was in Rochester. The second year was virtual because, as everybody, we were locked down. And last year we had a kind of a hybrid event in Syracuse where we had a physical event, but we also broadcast it. And so we had panels of experts talking about food and ag related subjects. We had virtual panels. So you can see here, if you were in the audience, this is what you would see if you were at home. You would see the panelists live as well. We also had a pitch competition. So our 20 finalists would pitch in front of a panel of judges. Those judges are experts from across the food and ag space. And they spent, so we had 20 pitches across 2 days. And there was also an exhibition in the main exhibition hall where the startups and those partners that I mentioned earlier had their booths, got together. So this event is going to occur again with any luck, if we get the funding that Gio referenced in his handover to me, this will occur again in November. We haven't announced a date yet because we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but the plan for now is to go ahead and do this again in November. So if you're in the food and ag space, I'd really encourage you. It's not expensive to attend, and it's a great event, and a lot of creative people from the food and ag space convene there. And we had our 20 winners. This is a beautiful shot, including Commissioner Ball on the far right. And our big winner was Real Eats. There she is receiving her $1 million first prize. So it's a big competition, awards serious money, $1 million top prize, $2.5 million prizes, $250,000 prizes. To keep on schedule, because I think I'm eating up the clock here, I will just say something about the top three, but there you can go to our website, and I'll put the website up here at the end and learn more. Everybody Eat is a phenomenal company that produces allergen-free, delicious foods and snack foods that everyone can eat, and you can have them, and they're good enough that you wouldn't be thinking that they were some kind of limit for you, and you never have to worry about if a friend visits or someone in your family has a food allergy or sensitivity. That's their whole thing, and they're phenomenal. What really won them over was they taste good, and I'll tell you, if you can make it healthy for people and taste good, you're gonna do well in the world. Ascribe Bioscience, to give you an idea of the other types of companies. This is technology that uses naturally occur signaling for molecules in the soil microbiome to produce broad spectrum biopesticides, non-toxic biopesticides for crop, to enhance crop yields. So this is technology born out of Cornell, actually, that's growing and having an impact and will be having impacts here in the region on farms here in terms of production and yield. So, and doing it in an environmentally friendly way. So it's another great example. So you have a food company who won the million, you have a $500,000 winner that's in a biopesticide. And then a third winner was New Peak with a berry harvester robot, basically. And they brought it, put it on stage, very sharp, very interesting. And they're developing their robot here for the berry industry. They're looking at strawberries, of course, but they're also extending this to other crops. So it's pretty exciting innovation. So I'm just going to jump right to the end, and then I can hand back. First of all, here's the timeline that I mentioned. Applications will open in May, all things willing, that the funding and budget gets nailed down. Closing in July, finalists in September, and mentoring in the fall, and the pitch competition in November. Two things I'd like to highlight just real quick. If you have an innovation of your own or know somebody that does, we at Cornell, at Rev, our incubator in Ithaca, run hardware programs. I'd send you to revithaca.com to check out our hardware accelerators. And we run a program in the summer for a hands-on opportunity to essentially build your prototype. And that program is open now. It's another example of a great program that the ecosystem puts on. And also, we're going to have a food and ag networking night in Ithaca, April 14th. Again, you can go to revithaca.com. It's all one word, rev, R-E-V, Ithaca.com, and sign up. It's great. It's free. You'll see food and ag-related businesses pitch. And there will be food, maybe some ag, but mostly food there at the event. So finally, GrowNewYork.com. If you want to contact us, you can get us there at grow-ny@cornell.edu. When the application opens, you can apply there as well. I'm Brian Bauer. You can see my name here. You can send to me at brian.bauer@cornell.edu if you want to contact me directly. So I think that's, I did not keep a good clock, but I think I'll hand back to you for Seth for see if there's any questions.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Brian. That was very informative. You too, Gio. And I'll say that the Grow New York competition is probably on the top three of my favorite conferences, and the students we take as well every year always get a lot of takeaway from it. So thank you for the work you're doing there, both of you. Any questions in the chat, or again, feel free to raise your hand and I can unmute you. Okay, no takers right now. Again, feel free if you have questions to drop them in the chat or the Q&A. Oh, we do have one.
I'm putting my email address in the chat for people. Oh, I guess that really says host and panelists. Hold on, there's got to be a way. Oh, everyone, here we go. So that people can see it, because it was meant to be in my slides. And so if someone does have questions, feel free to email me at brian.bauer@cornell.edu. So
we do have one hand raised from Chris. I'm going to go ahead, Chris, allow you to talk. You should be able to go ahead.
I want to ask, how developed are the contestants, businesses how developed are their businesses?
Yes.
Once they have to apply for the proposal? Like, do they have to have a business already in motion?
So yeah, this is a startup competition focused on businesses ready to win $1 million. And so you typically would have an entity already formed, you'd have a small team in place, you'd have a product or service that you'd already kind of prototyped and were ready to scale. Normally this is about taking that business from, hey, we've kind of proven this, we've got, you know, some traction and we're ready to scale and build it. And so it's kind of at that cusp, that growth cusp. And so there's lots of programs, ESD funds, other around the state, to incubators and similar programs to help people incubate ideas and get to that stage. And then this is kind of take it to the next stage when you're ready to scale. And you can learn more if you go to grow-ny.com. There's some some specifics laid out there about the maturity of the startup. Great question though. And I'm sorry, I tried to keep it short and I had a slide on that and I skipped over it with my little short edit.
Am I allowed to ask a question to Stephen?
Sure.
Or Stephen?
Sure, go ahead.
Could you redefine the acronym again? I'm sorry, I forgot it.
The acronym or?
The main acronym you was using to describe your, the loan, not the loaning company, but the, I'm sorry, I'll come back when I have the question fully formed.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Any other questions? Okay.
Thanks, Chris, for being bold enough to ask a question. I think it makes it more fun for us if you do ask, and I appreciate it.
Agreed. Okay, if there's nothing else right now, we will move over to Bob from USDA Rural Development.
Okay, can everyone hear me?
Can hear you over here.
Okay, I do not have my camera turned on. I apologize for all those participants out there, but at the federal government here, despite all our money, our technology has limited us in our bandwidth. So I'd rather have you hear me and be able to see my screen than trying to watch my mouth move and not understand what I'm saying. I'm going to, at this point, just before I share my screen, just kind of give a brief rundown of what I do, who I work for. Under USDA, the agencies that you're probably most familiar with are going to be the Farm Service Agency, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and Rural Development. We all used to be under one entity called Farmers Home. Back in the mid-1990s, it was broken apart into the three different entities. I work for Rural Development. I work specifically within the business programs. So I'm not here to talk about the conservation reserve programs, protecting your water, operating loans for your farm. The programs that I'm going to talk about, what they do is they focus on what do you want to do once you have the apples in the box? What are you going to do with the milk in your tank? What are you going to do with your specialty bison milk? Are you going to make some kind of fancy soap or something? That's the kind of thing that we work with regards to farming. Our programs that I'm going to run through many of them, most of them, are not limited to farms. And we have worked with Farm Credit in the past. We've worked with Empire State Development, and we've worked with a host of other organizations. Many of these programs are going to require you to work with a intermediary, or I guess for lack of better words, a sponsor organization. Organizations like CADE, Mohawk Valley Edge, Cornell Cooperative Extension, IDAs, Business Development Centers, Ag Innovation Center at Cornell, plus others. They're just some of the examples that we have worked with. Many of these programs are going to require them to apply on your behalf. In the case of guaranteed loans, for example, Farm Credit or another lender would come in and get the loan, and then we come in and we guarantee the loan. We're basically functioning as your mortgage insurance, if you will, against that loan. It enables the lenders to make the loans and take some risks that they otherwise wouldn't necessarily do. Okay. So having said that, I'm now going to, I'm going to share my screen. And share. Okay. Seth, did you post those links in the chat or someplace that people can access them?
Yep, I'll drop them in the chat right now.
Okay. In the chat, I gave Seth a series of links. This one is going to be for the Entrepreneur's Guide. So you don't necessarily have to go there, but if you want to follow through, you're more than welcome to join me in the process. If you go down to pages 14, I believe, if you see the section right here where it's talking about for-profit enterprises, and then it goes down, you got two more pages, public entities and nonprofit entities. So there's a host of programs. Each of these contain active links to get to those particular programs. So instead of doing a PowerPoint, I was going to work off of this and take you into some of the programs that would be of interest, or that I would think would be of more interest to the participants who are looking for assistance, who are on this right now. Seth had indicated that there were several producers, meat processors, some dairy folks, some people that grow vegetables and other produce. So what I'm going to do at this point is I want to open up the link here under the value-added producer grant. This is going to be the first one I'm going to talk about. If you click on the link, it'll bring it up. You'll have the Federal Register link. You'll have the FAQs. You'll have a bunch of other things that will pop up in this particular program. Now, the reason I'm bringing this one up first is, as you see, that if you're submitting through grants.gov, the applications have to be received in there by midnight on April 25th. So that's going to be your first deadline. Next deadline, if you're sending in a paper application, they have to be in by May 2nd or postmarked by May 2nd. Okay. Now, the value-added program, we talked about once you have the apples in the box. This is if you are looking at maybe making apple pies, apple butter, frozen apple slices, apple juice, those kind of things. You need to produce at least 51% of what you are going to be processing. And this program, it's a grant program. It is a reimbursement program. So if you're selected, you basically submit your invoices and things, and you get reimbursed based on that information. Okay. And to get more out of this, if there's specific questions, I would encourage you to ask so I stay on track with what programs are of interest to the participants here, because there's a bunch of programs. I want to give you your biggest bang for your buck. Any questions on value added? Okay. Things that the money can be used for. It's primarily used for technical assistance / planning purposes, or as a working capital, working capital funds. It cannot be used for real estate, equipment, capital improvements, those kind of things. They're all expendable type of monies that go out the door. So if you're looking for jars, labels, bags, web design, marketing expenses, those are the kind of things that would fall under that working capital category. If you're not ready to do that, if you're looking to do a feasibility study, maybe a market study, put together a business plan, this would be one that you could apply for those planning purposes. This is one of the few where you, the producers, apply directly to USDA. Said most of our programs, you have to work through some intermediary or a sponsor organization. This is one of the few that you apply directly to USDA. Okay. Any questions on this before I jump to the next one? All right. Let's see here. Got to. All right, let's see. Okay, the next one, if you want to find the link for the meat and poultry processing expansion program. This is one of the links that posted in the chat. This is another one that you apply directly to USDA. This does not require you to go through a sponsor or intermediary. What this is for is just like it says, you want to start, you want to expand meat and poultry processing. And with this, there is no rural requirement for this to happen. So if you're in an area, most of our programs are going to be restricted to areas of population under 50,000, does not apply for this particular program. What they're looking for is projects that are in late stage development, domestically owned. It does allow for deer and elk processing, looking at using USDA standards, and it's capped at 25 million max or 20% of the total project cost, whichever is less. And once again, these are grant dollars. They can be used for modernizing expansion, which can include renovations, build out on the buildings. It can include equipment, so on and so forth. It can also be used for workforce recruitment, training, and entrepreneurship training for that particular purpose. You've got 48 months to use that particular program. It cannot be used for prior expenses, indirect costs, R&D, or union-related items. Are there any questions on that? No? Okay. And then I would just mention that when we're going through, you can take a look at the other links. There is a food supply chain guaranteed loan program that's out there. And once again, you can work with Farm Credit or any of the other lenders that you might have to come through. They are the ones that would apply for the guarantee on your behalf. And we would process that accordingly. And those have a 90% guarantee, and they've got reduced and no fee options, you know, for the guarantee, the annual renewal. It's a pretty good deal. And with that, I'm going to open it up to questions, because there's a lot of programs and I'd rather direct everything accordingly.
So again, folks, any questions, feel free to throw in the chat or raise your hand and I can unmute you.
Man, quiet group. And okay, I'm going to pause the share then. I'll turn it back over to you, Seth.
Okay. Any questions for any of the presenters before we wrap up for the evening? Okay, if there's not going to have any more questions, I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time out this evening to attend, and of course thank our panelists for providing that information. We hope everybody was able to take some value from the information that was shared this evening. For further information about what was discussed this evening, you can visit our website within the next 48 hours. Our post-event page will be up with this recording, as well as all the links and contacts information that was shared. With that, if there's no questions looming in the chats, we had a couple of thank yous. We will wrap up.
Yeah, I would just say one thing in closing, Seth, is that you did post, or you do have my contact information to post. If anybody has any questions on any of those programs or looking for any intermediaries, feel free to reach out to me and I will direct them accordingly. I cover the whole state.
Thank you very much, Bob. And I'm sure it goes without saying that's the rest of the presenters would say the same. Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for attending. Again, all the information that was discussed and links will be shared on our post-event page within the next 48 hours. At www.cobleskill.edu/institute. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you, Seth. Thank you, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, all.